Welcome into the CHGO White Sox podcast, presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Welcome into the CHGO studios. This is Studio A in our West Loop offices. I am Sean Anderson, the host of the CHGO White Sox podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. This is CHGO White Sox podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at CHGO_White Sox. Let's introduce the team. Today we are being produced by Stephen Nicholas. Hello, Stephen.
How's it going, guys?
I just want to throw you for a loop.
Awesome.
Let's introduce the panel. We got on our far left, Vinny Duber. Follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He is the beat writer for the CHGO White Sox beat. And then our community leader, the man in the middle, Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
Follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. What's up, guys? You enjoying this gloomy day?
It's great. Finally, March is over. After today, we get into some real months with April. Imagine this would have been home opener, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. 31st.
This would have been opening day. It would have been freezing cold. It would have been miserable.
They would have played this game, too.
Absolutely.
Ugh.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, the rain stopped after about 11. Oof. So this would have been perfect opening day weather. You know, the Roger Bossert's done all this work. Mm-hmm. The grass is all wet. The seats are all wet. And there's like, you know, 5,000 people at the G-Rate.
We definitely would have gotten a media session with Roger today. That's no question.
And man, thank God for the lockout. Who has ever said that?
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
I mean, the weather in Detroit next weekend is not supposed to be very nice either.
Yeah, you excited for that?
But I don't got to go. That's you.
It's going to be cold there, just like it was cold in September.
I do wonder how the lockout is affecting Roger Bossert. Why haven't we talked about that yet on the podcast?
I mean, we saw plenty of Roger down in Arizona. He was there doing his work on the fields of Camelback Ranch. So he's a working man. He's got more than 6 month job. He's a year round kind of guy.
Yeah, he's done a lot of the like consulting for other baseball parks, right, and football stadiums. So
across the world, yeah, as if I'm not mistaken.
Who watches Camelback Ranch when Roger Bossert isn't there? The sod son?
The sod son?
There's some guy or girl there that's just watching. They got to play some
The sod
games.
Neighbor.
The sod neighbor?
Yeah.
He also gets the mail.
Right.
Well, today on the CHGO White Sox podcast, we'll be doing some icebreakers. We got some Michael Conforto talk. Apparently he had an injury back in January. We'll talk about maybe if that's why he's still available on the free agent market. We'll continue previewing the AL Central teams. We've previewed the Royals. We've previewed the Motor City Kitties. We've previewed the Minnesota Twins. Today we have the Cleveland Guardians on the docket. We'll also discuss opening day starter for the Chicago White Sox. Will it be Lance Lynn? Will it be Lucas Giolito? We got some quotes from Dallas Keuchel to shine upon that discussion as well. Am I missing something? No.
What we're going to talk about right now.
What are we talking about right now,
baby? The icebreaker.
What's the icebreaker?
Well, I don't know how many people have subscribed to ESPN Plus out there, but if you do, Jeff Passan, noted national baseball writer, he picked the White Sox to win the World Series.
What?
So that's kind of nice if you're a White Sox fan and you put a lot of stock into Jeff's predictions there. You know, we're gonna have our own predictions coming up next week.
Yeah, April 6th. So the 2 days before opening day for the Chicago White Sox, and I guess 1 day before opening day, which is April 7th, we will be having our big prediction show. We have already filled them all out. We're excited to bring them to you. But I was pretty shocked that Jeff Passan picked the White Sox. I don't know about you guys, like the fact that you have a national writer from the outside looking in and still seeing the potential of this team. It's a brighter note than what we've been talking about, I feel like. You know, talking about a subpar offseason. Kind of going to your point, Vinny, you can have a subpar offseason, yet, you know, still be. You're not starting from zero. You could still, you know, improve your team and fill out some holes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think we're using this as a nice little tease toward our own predictions next week. But right, Jeff might not be the only guy with the White Sox and Dodgers in the World Series.
Interesting. I like that. Mm. A little meat on that bone.
Yeah, I mean, going through the predictions, it was tough. It's a fun discussion always. Not to spoil anything, we do think the White Sox are winning the AL Central.
Whoa.
But
calm down.
Don't give it away, Sean.
We're excited to give you those on April 6th. But, Herb, like, the fact that people are getting all excited over this and Jeff Passan making this prediction, like, does it mean anything to you? Like, does this change your outlook on the Sox? Does it make you feel a little bit better that, you know, a national view is being seen so positively of the Sox?
Well-respected journalists like Jeff Passan showing faith in what the White Sox have on their team always should give you a little bit more confidence in what your squad is doing. Yeah, of course, 100%. It's not a blowhard. It's not a guy that's just throwing out stuff just to throw it out there. Jeff is very, very respected, and he has his times where he's going to be funny. On. You ever see him do this Elmo thing? Like, he's my favorite MLB insider, bar none. He is bar none the best guy out there. And when he throws something out there like that, I was absolutely astonished. Firstly, because, you know, I got my own negative thoughts about the White Sox. This whole offseason was, you know, kind of painted a bad picture in my mind. But then I was like, we got Luis Robert. Oh, we got Eloy Jimenez. Lucas Giolito, awesome. Lance Lynn, god damn, we have a real, actually good whip. And so, yes, Vinny is here sometimes. He's like, hey, guys, come on now. You guys got a little negative vibe about the White Sox. We have a real ass, good ass team. You, I think you said the other day, we're not starting from zero. Yes, the Colorado Rockies had a better offseason than the White Sox, but the White Sox are much better than the Colorado Rockies, and they will compete for the World Series this year. And that feels good that a national guy is also going on that ledge and saying, I feel that they're going to beat the Dodgers, who are a juggernaut. I maybe not agree with them, but it's really good to have.
Well, it's funny, too, because I saw on some other betting show that someone picked the White Sox thinking that Eloy was going to have a big season. And it's funny that Jimbo says this may be the first time ever that people outside of Chicago are now more optimistic than Sox fans. We are all afraid to let go of the pain of the past, which is true. I mean, there was a whole bit I did on Locked on Sox about White Sox therapy and how this team, you know, it needs intensive therapy to get over some of the things behind them. But this is a very bright 2022. I mean, there's a reason Rick Hahn did stand up at a press conference once and say, ask me after the parade. It's like, this is the expectation, as much as we want to clown on them, saying this lineup and this roster has championship aspirations. How it's currently constructed, they still won 93 games last year, back-to-back postseason appearances. It is nice to at least get some outside optimism.
And it's good to know that if you're not going to listen to me, at least you'll listen to Jeff Passan. Sorry.
Sorry, Vinny. To
you. It's just, you know,
you're
again.
You're too close to us.
Too close to the situation.
Like when Jeff says, like, oh, my God,
you've made,
Jeff.
Yeah, you've made me more optimistic. I could say that. Doing this podcast with you, you've definitely made me more optimistic. Look at things a little bit less, you know, harshly.
Cynically. That's my job. But the other four teams that we have previewed, and we're going to preview another one today, and the Cleveland Guardians would trade their roster currently for the White Sox roster in a second.
Yeah, I mean, that might be
I think they trade their roster for a few of the White Sox players in a second.
Yeah, they could. Like, they there's probably 25 teams in the major leagues that would like, yeah, well, I want the White Sox roster.
Right, that's a question. Like, we put this up when we were talking about having a subpar offseason, your question of where do the White Sox rank, and Rick even talked about that on November 5th. Like, he saw that team on November 6th as the second-best team in the AL. Now, you know, if you flip that question, like, how many teams would want to be the White Sox? I mean, there's probably eight of them that probably, you know, for sure wouldn't want to be, that might be in a similar spot or a little bit better, like, in the entire MLB. But, I mean, the Sox have a target on their back for how they've performed over the past 2 years. So, I mean, it is good to see some outside optimism, and not to harsh yours, Vinny. You are very optimistic. Definitely the most optimistic on this podcast. I've been optimistic about a different guy, Michael Conforto. We got some news about him yesterday from Ken Rosenthal. Apparently, back in January, he landed awkwardly on his shoulder, causing some concerns about his free agency, which is why Scott Boras releasing the news about his shoulder injury. Seems like interest has kicked up in the past week, but Herb, let's go to you first on the Conforto news. Mm-hmm. Was it shocking to hear that he was an injury? He has an injury or suffered an injury in January, you know, landing awkwardly on a dive, because we have been pretty confounded about his free agent status.
I mean, it clears up a little of the why he hasn't signed for a team, because you know that Mike Conforto, the player, would have been signed no matter what in this market. Not shocking, but, you know, it clears up some stuff. I think now it's late in the season or the off season. Most teams have their right fielder. Most teams have their designated hitter. This is advantage White Sox. If they really want to go out and sign a big-time bat, Mike Conforto would probably come to them cheap, probably come to them with a one-year deal with an option on top of that, with a team option. And I think that would still get their representative bats for Andrew Vaughn, probably not as much for Gavin Sheets, because you have to prioritize which one you think is a better player. And I think they think that Andrew Vaughn is a better hitter, so they would give him more bats no matter what. I think it's advantage White Sox right now if they really want to get him. Now, if they don't, cool. But this clears up a lot of things that I was wondering. Maybe Rick is sitting back. It's like, you MFers talking. You didn't know the thing. That man was hurt. I knew he was hurt in January. I want Rick to come out and say that one time. It's like, y'all, because ain't nothing. Stop talking. I know what's going on. I've been a GM for a lot of years now, almost 10 years. Shut the heck up.
Yeah, I mean, as much
I can cuss, but I don't want to, Steven. You know, there's kids out there.
As much as we want to, you know, talk about Rick Hahn and the job that he's done, I mean, he does know more baseball about me. I'm not afraid to make that statement that he knows more about baseball and how the inner workings of baseball has. I mean, they've had this information since January. I know there's a burner account that recently tweeted out that the White Sox just started getting re-engaged with Michael Conforto, and this was before the Rosenthal tweet, so this at least lines up with the tweet of how he wanted to get back to 100% before resuming contract negotiations with clubs. It seems like he's resumed negotiations with clubs. Vinny, do you expect him to sign before opening day just because of the way that everything has unfolded? The draft moved back now, so he won't be able to wait till June to get signed if he's trying to get that pick off of him. He'll have to wait till July. It does feel like signing on April 7th or before April 7th isn't his best bet. Do you think he will sign before opening day?
I don't know. You've got an agent in Scott Boras who usually figures out a way to get the most for his clients, and if that means this time around, you know, waiting, you know, deep into April or May or June or whatever. I mean, we saw it happen with Dallas Keuchel, who's also a Boras client. So, you know, that kind of throws a wrinkle into it. You know, I think this definitely, like Herb, that you mentioned, would go a little bit of the way toward explaining why he hasn't signed yet. But I'll also bring this up. The White Sox gave a multi-year deal to Joe Kelly, knowing that he's not going to be ready for opening day.
Right.
Now, it makes me wonder, okay, we heard from Ken that there was an injury in January with Michael Conforto. How bad's the injury? We don't know. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, I would imagine that Boras and Conforto's camp would be painting it as you know, Rosie, not a big deal as possible. But who knows? Maybe you get a few team doctors that look at him and there's a different opinion from what the agent's saying. Obviously, that is all hypothetical stuff. But, you know.
But, I mean,
you know,
your point, though, I mean, they say it happened in January. An injury that took him about 2 months to get fully back to 100% to.
Right, and I think the thing is, why would you... A lot of teams are trying to minimize risk, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it's not necessarily that they look at Conforto and go, well, we don't need that guy. It's that we don't need to deal with the question mark that might be that guy kind of thing. And if that is a serious enough injury, I could see where teams would be hesitant, especially if they're okay with some of the plan Bs or some of the internal options that they have, which the White Sox would certainly fall into that category.
And I do wonder, too, with the lockout, I mean, if he hurt himself in January, he probably wasn't able to talk to anybody. Him being a free agent, I know teams or players that were a part of a team, like let's say Lance Lynn, if he had, you know, knee issues, he was still able to talk
sure.
to team doctors.
Yeah.
I don't know if Conforto was able to talk to the Mets doctors. I don't know if he was able to even get in contact with some of these GMs at this point during July or during January and during February. So
that's a very good point. Yeah.
Pretty shocking, like post lockout, if he's not renegotiating or he's not re-engaging in contract talks until this point recently.
That's a very good point that you bring up too. Is that not? I mean, he was a free agent, so even in a normal offseason, had that been the case, it's possible he wouldn't have had anything. Obviously, I'm sure he's got access to perfectly fine doctors with all the money that he's made in his career. But the point being that he might be put on a different plan than a team might put him on. And maybe that's where the hesitation, or not even hesitation, but that's a difference that could exist right now in these real life conversations. So
yeah, and I don't know if, you know, I'm sure that word got out like to Rick Hahn and people in the White Sox front office that hey, Michael's not doing anything right now, and the reason is because of an injury he had in January. Probably during the lockout, they couldn't necessarily talk directly to Rick Hahn, but there's got to be a way. I mean, you think that the White Sox didn't know that Michael Kopech had COVID late in February? There's somebody had to get a back channel. Hey, we're not ready yet. He's got to be shut down for a little bit. You know, if you need to plan accordingly and get another starter in, cool. But otherwise, you know, he's got this COVID. You need to ramp him up eventually.
I just think back to the Bears in their first day on free agency. They go and signed Larry Ogunjobi, right, of the Bengals. He ends up failing his physical. So even in a non-locked out NFL, they didn't have the right medicals to realize where he was health-wise. So it might be a huge enough red sign, especially for a team like the Sox, who, you know, maybe this is the piece to push them over. If he is injured, though, that is something that we wouldn't want to spend our money, especially with, you know, if we're looking to trade Craig Kimbrell, you know, that money that could be used on Conforto is currently being used on Kimbrell. Why would we right now, you know, trade a piece that we can't in Kimbrell? He might be able to up his value and also sign a guy who currently might be banged up.
And explains that what you just brought up. Like, we can't trade Craig Kimbrell until we know that we're going to get maybe a bat that we need. And so Rick Hahn had plans probably in November. Hey, I'm going to go out and get this bat, this bat, this bat. And yes, I'll re-sign Craig Kimbrell to trade him because that was the expectation everybody mm-hmm. had. But then the monkey wrench was thrown in there with, oh, he's not negotiating? What are you talking about, Scott? Come on now. And now the revelation that he has an injury. So I, you know, I feel a little bad. I jumped the gun a little bit. I'm want to do that on Rick Hahn and not doing a good job this offseason. Maybe his hands were tied by things like this where he's got to keep Craig Kimbrell on the team. And
yeah,
ultimately, it's not necessarily a bad thing that Craig Kimbrell pitches on your team if he's Craig Kimbrell.
It's not a bad thing. And then we had somebody reach out being like, what's the issue with having Kimbrell on the roster and you know how Conforto might help the team? And it was just more about like, this team's bullpen is already great. They just have a hole in right field. If Craig Kimbrell bounces back and has a great run up to July, like my biggest concern is, will he just fall apart like he did in 2021 again? Like, that's my only concern with Craig Kimbrell. I think that he will be fine, for the first half of the season in 2022. The best way to support CHGO is to download the PointsBet app and use the code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that right now, you'll get 2 risk-free bets up to $2,000. But that's not it. If you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from the CHGO locker, all for making more than a $50 first-time deposit at PointsBet. Fun part two, CHGO shirts have started shipping out, so you'll get them soon. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com and we'll help you out. Your home for live in-play betting just got even better. Introducing PointsBet's newest feature, the live college basketball same game parlay. So if you're watching college basketball tonight, maybe some NIT action, maybe some March Madness action on Saturday, definitely take advantage of the live college basketball same game parlay that PointsBet has to offer. You can watch live, parlay live, and if you want more, if you want better odds, you can boost your live same game parlay with PointsBet. So watch live, parlay live, and boost live with PointsBet. Online sign up is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish. Plus, during PointsBet's Match Madness, all users can earn up to $100 in free bets. During each round, just place a $50 pregame wager and get a free $20 live bet to be used for that round. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. And Herb, you've been taking Athletic Greens, right?
Yeah, great.
Yeah, they are great. Our next partner has a product I literally use every day. Herb literally uses it every day. I started taking AG1s because I just started this full-time job. I wanted to start getting on a schedule, wake up at 9:30 every morning, get my body right, drink my water, take my greens, and Athletic Greens lets me do both. I get to take in 12 ounces of water, mix in my AG1 scoop, and it's a perfect way to start my day. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. I personally like it to start my day off right, and apparently 7,000 other people do because Athletic Greens has 7,000 five-plus star reviews out there. It's also lifestyle-friendly whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. It will be able to help you start your day right. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. Just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. Just 8 to 12 ounces. Herb likes 10 ounces mm-hmm. of water. Put the scoop in, mix it up, and you will be set for your day. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/CHGOSOCKS. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/CHGOSOCKS. Take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Guys, let's jump into some opening day starter talk. Today was supposed to be opening day. It is not. It is still April 8th after the first two series were canceled after the whole lockout debate. But we had this talk last year. It was probably clearer. It was probably pretty easily Lucas Giolito. But now there's some question marks after the way Lance Lynn pitched in 2021, after the way Dylan Cease finished in 2021. And, you know, Lucas Giolito had a fine year. But let's talk about who should start opening day for the Sox. Tony La Russa hasn't made an announcement yet. Did you talk to him about this down in spring training?
That question was not asked while I was down there, but I did see that it was asked in the interim here, and it looked like he's deciding between Lucas and Lance, which I think everybody would have expected. But that's what we've gotten from the Southside skipper. Yeah.
So why don't we have that debate? Lucas or Lance? There's one guy that chimed in, Dallas Keuchel, my best buddy. He talked about the scenario of who will be the opening day starter. Keuchel said, "I've always been a big proponent of how you finish the year before is how you should start.
How you finish the year prior is how you should start the following season.
Thank you. It doesn't matter if you're 22 years old or 34. Lance finished top three in the Cy Young vote. I think he should get the opening day start." So there's a veteran, former Cy Young right there, Dallas Keuchel, backing up Lance Lynn. Herb, Lynn or Giolito? Who are you going with?
I go with Giolito because I think he is more the White Sox ace right now going forward. We like to give contracts out to people for what they're going to do instead of what they have done. And I think while Lance Lynn is good, I think his ascension is at its peak. He's good. Top three in the AL, Cy Young.
Right.
I think Lucas Giolito is still ascending to the higher heights. I think he's the better pitcher right now and will be the better pitcher by the end of the year. So I'm giving the ball to my guy who I think been with the team longer, was the worst pitcher in baseball in 2018. And now, while you might think that he pitched poorly last year, early in the year, I would agree with you. He had a pretty decent year last year. It's comparable to the year before. So I say that Lucas Giolito gets the ball when we start up in Detroit, April 8th in Detroit.
Yeah, I don't think there's a wrong answer, which is the good problem to have here, right? I mean, whether you go with either of these guys, you're going to put your team in a very good position to win the game. I tend to think, you know, a little bit more that the opening day start isn't really that important. It's more important who's starting game one of the playoffs, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And last year we saw that was Lance Lynn for the White Sox. But I think the guys care. You know what I mean? I think the guys care who's starting on opening day. To say that you're your team's opening day starter is a badge of honor for sure. If you're talking about the reward, who deserves the reward the most? Yeah, Lance Lynn had a phenomenal season last year. He had the best season on the team. Don't get me wrong. He is very much a leader in that clubhouse, and especially on that pitching staff. I think he would be a terrific choice. But Herb, I would agree with you. If I'm Tony La Russa, if I'm wearing the manager's hat, which is a terrible idea, you don't want me to do that. But I would go with Giolito. I think I've said a lot on this podcast. He's the ace of the staff, in my opinion. He's the guy that I would want to have the ball in a big game after what he showed in that 2020 playoff start that he made. So Giolito would be my pick, but you can't really go wrong.
You definitely have the best mustache of any manager. That's for sure. I think there's no competition.
I don't know about all time. We'd have to go through the list there a little bit.
I mean, Jim Leland had a nice one.
Jim Leland did have a nice one. But Jim Leland's not coaching. Right now, I think that you might be the only manager with a mustache, which is a good look. I think that we should have
it's a good
more
managerial
Jim
look.
Yeah. Jim Leland was cool looking. I trusted Jim Leland. I don't trust most managers. I trust Jim Leland. I'm going to go with Lucas Giolito. Going back to the Keuchel quote, talking about how you finish, July 4th to the end of the season, Lucas Giolito had an ERA of 3.18. Lucas Giolito was fantastic last year. He had a really, really bad start in Boston last year. Outside of that, he was pretty decent. I mean, I really don't think that there is a competition here. I was shocked that Lance Lynn even started game one of the ALDS last year. I didn't think with his history against Houston that made any sense, especially in that ballpark with the way that Houston takes advantage of the Crawford boxes. I thought it made zero sense. I would have put Lucas out in game one. And Lucas, we've seen him in Oakland, him in Minnesota on August 21st, 2019. Like, he loves these big games. He loves to play up when the spotlight is the biggest. He loves being the guy. I know that Lance Lynn has a ton of experience in leadership and has helped, Kopech and Cease guidance-wise become the pitchers that they have been. But Lucas Giolito, especially with how you've pissed him off with the current arbitration stuff, the way that he has added poundage to his frame, I really think that he wants this. I think that he wants to have a better 2022 than 2021. he feels probably disappointed in his 2021, even though it was still fantastic. I think that this is the guy. If you have the face of a franchise like you do, representing your stadium's name and commercials, it would make no sense to not have Lucas Giolito be your guy. I mean, that's the representation of your team.
And to speak a little bit more about Lance Lynn, I think him not getting the ball on opening day not necessarily will peeve him off, but he'll pitch with a little bit more, hey, you guys don't think I'm the ace of this staff? No, Saturday, you're effed up, Tigers. This is, you're done. He's going to call people slapdicks all day long. He's going to be yelling on the mound. He's going to be motivated to get the job done. I think the reverse of that, I don't think happens. Like, if Lance starts, Lucas is like, cool, Lance earned it. He was obviously the ace of the staff last year, and I'll pitch on Sunday. I think the opposite of Lance just getting just mad. Like, Tony, you don't believe I'm the best pitcher on this staff? Are you kidding me? Nah, I'm going to show you that I'm the best pitcher on this staff, and the Tigers are not going to get any runs off of me. Lucas gave up two yesterday. They ain't getting none on me because I like the competition they have, and it seems like all the pitchers build off each other, mm-hmm. and I think Lance especially builds off of the other guys.
What's the pitching like dynamic like? I know you haven't been able to be in the locker room due to COVID and due to the Zoom stuff, but if you were in spring training, like, are these guys like truly buds? Like the starting rotation, like, is it a good kind of, you know, rapport they have with one another, the five?
Yeah, it seems that. I mean, it sure seems that way. I mean, even going back, you know, to 2020, which was the last time I was at spring training before this year, I mean, they kind of walk around in a bit of a huddle, you know what I mean? Because they're on kind of the same schedule, or they're on a thing where it's like, all right, today is the day that Giolito is going to do the most kind of work, and they stand around and watch him. You know what I mean? Today's the day Lance is going to throw live BP. All the four other guys are lined up on the sideline watching him. I mean, and listen, that might just be how spring training works. I might not be breaking any news here to anybody. Right. But to answer your question, yeah. And I mean, the way that the leadership role that Lance has taken has been talked about an awful lot, always in glowing terms. The leadership that Lucas brings on a regular basis has been talked about a lot, often in glowing terms. And I don't think you can discount what Dallas Keuchel has meant to this team as a veteran, too, in terms of his influence on some guys. I remember last year, Carlos Rodon referred to him as my very good friend, Dallas Keuchel, at one point in a media session. And I know Dylan Cease, you know, leans on Dallas as well as he does everybody else. So I think that I do think that is the case. And certainly what you were talking about, Herb, that whole competition between the five of them, again, that's something that happens on a lot of pitching staffs in a lot of years on a lot of teams, but you're definitely going to see it with these guys this year to try and one-up each other.
And I do wonder what the loss of Carlos Rodon will mean to that rotation. Thankfully, you know, Michael Kopech's a pretty good replacement. But it is interesting because, you know, Cease and Rodon were buddies. You mentioned his very good friend, Dallas Keuchel. So, you know, losing Rodon, I do wonder what the effect will be. And let's talk about that a little bit. You weren't here yesterday, Vinny. Glad to have you back today. We talked about Michael Kopech. He's going to be pitching tonight against the Reds in a spring training game. First appearance this spring training, going to pitch two innings, going to be trailed by Vince Velasquez. We tried to sort it out, like, when he will pitch. It seems like Kopech will pitch today. Keuchel slated for the next spring training game. Then it will go Giolito, Lynn, Cease, Kopech on the final spring training game, which should set him up for the home opener. So if we go Giolito 1, Lynn 2, Cease 3, would you have Kopech 4th starting the home opener?
Well, I think we get so used to just kind of lining them up in order of who we think is the best or who we think is going to be the most accomplished or something like that. Maybe you're of the opinion that, oh, Dallas Keuchel has a Cy Young. Dallas Keuchel's won the World Series. He's a veteran. Why is he pitching behind Cease even? Right. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. Or maybe you're of the opinion that Dallas is on the downswing. He should definitely be 5th. But there's so many questions about Kopech. Why isn't he 5th? We have a quote from Dallas that he said that I think explains it pretty good. And this is Dallas being a little more frank than anybody was about Michael Kopech. And he goes, we've got to be smart with how we line up guys. And I told Ethan Katz, if you need me to go before Kopech on the 4 or 3 spot in the rotation, and he's 4, being referring to Kopech, or if he's 4 and I'll be 5, to kind of make sure that we're going to fill some innings after his start, because we're going to use 3 or 4 bullpen guys for the first month or month and a half when Mike takes the ball. And again, I think that's more frank than even we heard from Ethan Katz or we've heard from Tony La Russa or Rick Hahn, a veteran pitcher knowing maybe where Michael Kopech is and kind of realizing the situation. Dallas Keuchel probably will line up fifth for that very reason, which is when Michael Kopech goes, he's maybe not going to be built up enough yet where he's going to be able to pitch the regular level of the rest of the guys. Obviously, everybody is on a different or an irregular level this year because of the lockout. But Kopech maybe can only go three innings or four innings. Right. And that is a big pressure on the bullpen. And so if Dallas can be regular Dallas, not last year second half Dallas, but regular Dallas, mm-hmm. and go out there and eat up six, seven innings, that saves your bullpen. And it builds your bullpen back. And I think the fear is that you go ahead and you throw all your guys in the one through four spot and then Kopech in the fifth, you know, obviously Giolito can then go out again and eat innings, but you've got a guy in Dallas who, and he believes he's going to be able to get back to that longevity that he's had throughout his career, that he can kind of be the guy to save the bullpen, to play a little bit of a stopper role. Doesn't matter how good or bad Kopech was in his start, it's just that he's not able to go as long.
Well, and the thing too, I do think that structurally that makes the most sense because of what you're saying, the length that Keuchel can go if, you know, Kopech can only go three or four, and then they end up using three or four guys in the bullpen, like Keuchel said. But the thing, too, is, like, stylistically wise, contact pitcher, hopefully he can just get out of the inning, you know, with six pitches or whatever, or you have seven pitches, and it's just an easy ride for Keuchel to get to the sixth inning. That seems makes a ton of sense because if you're able to get, you know, into the sixth inning, you can clean up, and then you have Giolito and Lynn too to even give you a ton extra more innings. Where if you're following up Kopech with Cease, you know, we've seen a couple of starts from Dylan where, you know, the control isn't there, he's a little bit off, might be rusty, just shaking off some April cobwebs. Like, Cease can be bounced out of the third inning, and, you know, you have Cease and Kopech only going three. You're taxing your bullpen a lot there. So it is going to be interesting. I mean, they spend a lot of money on their bullpen, Herb, but I think that's the correct way to start it up. Giolito, Lynn, Cease, Kopech, Keuchel. You agree?
Yeah, it works for me. I would want, and it looks like maybe they're doing it with Vince Velasquez, somebody to be paired up with him. Since the lockout is allowing them to have 28 men on the roster for the first, month, I would say instead of a guy like Vince Velasquez, who is a question mark for me, go to Raylo. Have Raylo be the guy that is paired with Kopech for the first month, and you can have that type of situation there because you have other guys, you know, a lot of right-handers in the bullpen, so Raylo can just be like, okay, every fifth start of Kopech's, I'm also tag-team with him, so Kopech gets me four, I'll go two. And then we get into our bullpen type of thing. Because Vince Velasquez, that's not a solid guy for replacing Michael Kopech. I would, in my heart of hearts, I would love to have Garrett Crochet to be the tandem guy, but he's going to probably be needed for the other games because there's two left-handers in the bullpen. I think you can have Raylo be the guy, and you give him some nice experience. You give him a longer chance to be, you know, last year, I think he got a little taste. Now he can have a real middle reliever role, like in the old days, where you're actually going multiple innings and you're counted on for going multiple innings. And I think that's his best role because he can just cut down some of the pitches and just throw that fastball 98 past people a little bit more instead of worrying about, oh, that guy saw me already the first time. I threw him a fastball. He hit it to the left field bleachers. Now I can, like, okay, I'm throwing him a fastball. He won't see me again because I'm only going three, right, and I'm good.
The only thing I would say to that, I would agree with you that Lopez can be relied upon probably a little bit more than Velasquez if we're just talking about the results.
Yeah.
I would say that the White Sox probably think that Lopez has a little bit more versatility at this point in terms of he just went a year or a portion of a year being a reliever. They know that he can be called on in any day of the week or any day during that rotation to come in and fill in. Velasquez, maybe they want to keep him on a starter schedule because that's what he's been on the majority of his career. Mm-hmm. And by assigning him to kind of piggyback, to use the term, Kopech, they can keep him on a starter schedule. His routine is a little bit more regular for him, and maybe that increases the chances of his success.
And thinking stylistically too, Kopech being this power arm, big fastball, big slider. That's Reynaldo Lopez.
Yeah.
Exclusively big fastball, big slider. I think the issue with Lopez is, you know, exposure. He was very good in a limited time last year, but he does only have two pitches. He only does have the fastball and slider. That's what he relied on last year. That's what worked for him. It's fine. That's what works. You can do that out of a bullpen roll, but I think if you're seeing a guy like Kopech, big fastball, big slider, it would be foolish to follow that up with Raylo just because it might be a similar
thing.
Yeah, a similar vibe. Where if you throw out Velasquez, who throws 93 and has these, you know, different mixes of a fastball, it will get guys a little bit off balance. Like, hopefully you can stylistically balance it where, you know, you have Keuchel with these, you know, pinpoint accuracy, sinker ball, you know, low 80 or high 80s guy, and then you bring in Velasquez's big 97 fastball. Like, maybe that is better stylistically wise to pair up.
I hear you. I hear you. I just think that Raylo is probably the better pitcher, and I want, you know, like Vince said, I want the results to be favorable, and rolling dice on Vince Velasquez, I don't want to do that too tough. He gives me Matt Latos vibes.
Are not the vibes you want.
Yeah, it's not necessarily because of Vince. He's probably a great guy, and I've heard Matt is not. So I would want somebody who I think they have a future in Raylo. He has a future in this Major League Baseball, and I think it is as a reliever. So why not start it this year as a guy who's a tag team? And then, like Vinny said, he's probably a little bit more valuable to the team than just a guy who's piggybacking on Michael Kopech. They probably want to use him in other times, too.
Yeah, we see the chat lighting up about Montas and Minaya. I mean, the more and more I look at this rotation, I don't think that they're going to add. I've even talked myself into thinking that Dallas Keuchel can be the most valuable pitcher for the White Sox in 2022 just because of the way that this whole thing's structured.
Did he not pitch well in 2020?
Yeah.
But I mean, Mickey Mouse season or not, yeah, he was top five Cy Young. Everybody as White Sox fans were astonished that he pitched so well that year. Why can't he do it again?
It was just, and I don't mean to bring it up, I know Mickey Mouse season, it was a small sample size, Herb. Like, it was 9 games.
If he does that small sample size again, I don't care. Like, it ends up to be a 450 ERA with 125 to 150 innings pitched. I'm not asking a lot for Dallas. The money's sunk cost.
More innings he provides, the better for the Sox.
Yes,
if he gives you 420 for 120, but he can give, or he gives you like 475 over 160, I think the Sox will take that 160.
I think here's the thing that you got to remember. Dallas Keuchel right now, fair to call him a question mark. Fair to call him an uncertainty. But you're calling him that because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yes.
Right.
It means that there is a chance that he could be the guy you saw in the second half last year. But it also means there's a chance he could be the guy you saw in 2020. And so I think that's the thing that some folks got to remember is that it is not a certainty that he's going to be bad.
No.
And so you got to wait and see which guy he is. I understand you want to minimize the uncertainties. That makes total sense. And it's possible that, you know, that we've seen the brightest days of Dallas Keuchel, but this is a guy who's bounced back from bad seasons in his career before. You might as well give him a chance to do it this time around.
I worry that it was his worst season, but also you shedding light in your piece about his back injury and his health last year gives me a little bit more of the ability to ease off on him, just a little bit.
I mean, think about his offseason. Got married. He's got less back problems. And hopefully, we talked about it yesterday. Confidence. Maybe he feels a little bit more confident this year. He's like, all right, everything's good. And, you know, I got a good woman behind me. My back is feeling much better.
Well,
and I know that I can get hitters out. I know I'm Dallas Keuchel. I know that 2021 isn't me. I was feeling a little bad about myself. I'm back. Because I remember in 2020, him having the dinner with all the players and his mom going up playoff or bus bitches. That type of thing got me hyped up, and then the season got wiped away. I feel with these quotes that Vinny's getting out there in spring training, he's talking. Like, that talk that he said about Michael Kopech, you don't hear that from another fellow rotation man. Like, he's like, hey, yeah, we're going to need some people because Michael's not going to be ready. And maybe he's got blessing from the front office to say that stuff, but I like the conversation. I like that he's freely saying these things, telling you these things, so you know that Mike's not ready for a full six innings right now. And he's telling you the truth. I love that. I love truth-telling by ball players. And maybe that truth-telling is a thing of confidence. He knows he's not going anywhere. He knows he's in the starting rotation. He feels good. And I can tell the truth now.
And you look back at last year, they had four great starting pitchers and Michael Kopech. And Dallas Keuchel was the odd man out, and he noticed that on the postseason roster. Now, not having Rodon, that fifth spot probably feels a little bit more secure. Reynaldo Lopez isn't really breathing down his neck for that spot. Vince Velasquez isn't breathing down his neck for that spot, where Carlos Rodon and Michael Kopech, that hidden gem in the bullpen, he could have, if they kept Rodon, could have knocked Keuchel out of this rotation. I bet Keuchel's feeling just a little bit more confident in the spot that he has. It feels like he is ready and knows that he's going to be pitching for the White Sox this year. Also, too, like, you're not going to be able to get rid of him. Like, Craig Kimbrell won't be moved for his $16 million contract, and you know, he's fairly similar to Kenley Jansen, maybe a little bit worse. But you look at Dallas Keuchel, he is probably the worst pitcher making $18 million. So, I mean, it's just tough to get rid of his contract.
We've
so
done our job, Sean.
You're really hoping for something to bounce back. Good Lord, I need to be careful watching the show. You guys are actually convincing me to have high hopes for Dallas. I don't want to root against him. Like, he is still the team.
I just think
regression can happen. I mean, he mentions it, like, you know, talking about being 34 in accordance to Lance Lynn. I mean, he's up there in age. Like, it's tough to bounce back from certain injuries. It's tough to bounce back at a certain age. So, like, I just wonder if, like, this is the iceberg. Like, he falls off and, you know, whatever. Like, this might be the end of Keuchel, but hopefully he's able to just bounce back and be the Keuchel that they signed back in 2020. If you enjoy CHGO, one way to help us out is to continue to grow. If you enjoy CHGO, one way to help us continue to grow is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. Not only are you going to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000, but if you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. It's time to give our PointsBet pick of the week. I'm going to give you a pick for tonight. We got the Bulls taking on the Clippers. Herb's going to the game.
Yeah.
And I thought the Bulls were going to be a little bit more of a favorite. I thought the injury report for the Clippers would come out. Paul George wouldn't be playing. It's not the case. I got him on the money line, minus 176.
You got the Bulls on the money line?
Bulls on the money line, minus 176. Woke up this morning, it was like 136. So I put a bad bet down. But I'm gonna roll with the Bulls tonight. Being at home, Clippers have been bad outside of the last game against the Jazz. So your pick of the week is Bulls money line tonight because Herb's going to the game. So what are you waiting for? Download the PointsBet app right now. Online sign up is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now, and you'll be signing up with the fastest sportsbook easier than ever, so you can start living your bet life in seconds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. And if you enjoy CHGO, come become a member. Join up. AllCHGO.com. If you want to be a part of the community that we're growing here at CHGO, AllCHGO is where you could sign up. If you sign up, first thing you'll get is a free t-shirt. Those started shipping out. We got some White Sox t-shirts going out. I'm getting my CHGO pocket flag shirt. Really excited for those sleek designs to reach your doors. If you want one to reach your door, allchgo.com. You could check out the CHGO locker, which has all of the shirts up for sale out there. Again, if you become a member, you get a free shirt. You also get access to our CHGO lounge. That's a members-only Discord. You could chat with all CHGO personalities in there and all of our community members. And you get access to premium written content written by none other than Vinny Duber right over there. So if you're looking for some great White Sox articles, some great White Sox content, especially with opening day just around the corner, sign up to become a member at allchgo.com. All right, let's continue.
Before you go, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. No, for sure.
When Sean's talking about the Discord, I think our plan in the future is to have a mailbag show. Yeah. Only people who are in the Discord can ask us questions for our mailbag show. So if that's going to push you for the next thing, become a member, because we'll be answering questions on those mailbag shows for a whole 60 minutes.
Herb, I mean, I just got to be honest with you. Makes sense for Monday. Monday mailbag, we can just put it in during the weekend. So if you want to join the Discord, we'll probably put the prompt out there on Friday. We'll have a Monday mailbag. If you have any Sox questions, come become a member. Come join our community at allchgo.com. Join that Discord, and you could become a part of our Monday mailbags that we'll be making with more regular during the season.
And once you get that, you get to Vinny's premium content. I mean, the other day I saw that the Kopech story and Keuchel story was under a paywall. So, hey, you guys couldn't read that good stuff. Vinny's got some good writing. He's a professional journalist.
He is.
And you guys need to get into that. AllCHGO.com. Become a member.
Way to sell it, Herbie.
You could talk to me.
Yeah, you could talk to the CHGO White Sox community leader, Uncle Herb.
Jesus Christ.
The real deal.
My guy Jimbo. Yeah, the realness.
The realness. The realness is
a sick name. Jimbo, he is a CHGO member.
Yes, he is. And he's got his CHGO sports shirt coming Monday. So excited for Jimbo. And Jimbo will be posting it. So, you know, if we see Jimbo getting that shirt, you know, we'll throw it up on Monday's show. Let's jump into our AL Central preview. This is the final team we're talking about. We've been going through the teams. Started off with Minnesota on Monday, then went to Kansas City. On Tuesday, then went to Detroit on Wednesday. Today's Thursday. Totally forgot. That's why I was going to screw up where the Royals were. Today's Thursday, which means we're talking about the Cleveland Guardians. They finished second in the AL Central last year. Let's look at their lineup and who they'll be tossing out. My fun part about researching the Guardians was what we did before the show and looked up their payroll, $37 million. And one player makes more than that in a year. Max Scherzer makes 43. So great to see that. But this is the projected lineup for the Cleveland Guardians. Miles Straw is your leadoff hitter in center field. Ahmed Rosario is their left fielder. I thought he was a shortstop.
I mean, that's the I get these from the MLB. You know, from MLB, their actual lineups they've done this week.
Well, Ahmed Rosario is been in the outfield before. He was a shortstop with the Mets. Third, Jose Ramirez playing third base. Fourth, Franmil.
Franmil. That's what they call him.
Franmil. Mm. Fifth, Josh Naylor playing right field. Sixth, Owen Miller playing second base. Seventh, Bob Bradley playing first base. Eighth, Austin Hedges catching. And ninth, Andres Jimenez playing shortstop. So looking at this lineup, Herb, what's your first reaction?
Terrible. you know, there's somebody on this studio that went to school with one of those players, the great Owen Miller and our Steven Nicholas.
That's right, roll birds.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
ISU guy?
Yeah.
Same time?
He was just a touch after me.
Huh. Yeah.
We might have overlapped a little bit.
Yeah.
My last year there.
Shout out Redbird.
Is he from Naperville? Like Nicky Lopez is?
I'm not sure where he's from.
Or is he from New Trier like Charlie Tilson? He's a local product, I know.
Maquon, Wisconsin is his birthplace. I'll try to figure out.
He's the ambassador of the Maquon.
I don't get that reference.
Great.
Oh, come on.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. Jerry Maguire?
The Quan.
Oh. I just know, show me the money! Wow. I've seen the movie, but I'm bad with movie references.
But look at that lineup.
He's from Wisconsin.
That lineup is absolutely terrible.
Like, and you like the guy part of aspect
like
of it.
Jose Ramirez, I'm pitching around. I don't care if Franimal can hit the ball 8 million feet. If I'm the White Sox, every single time they face Jose Ramirez, bases loaded. I don't give a damn. I don't want Jose. You guys know what Jose Ramirez has done versus the White Sox and the whole American League. That is the only person in that lineup that is deadly. Now, Miles Straw last year had a great, I think, in Houston versus the White Sox when he was an Astro, he had a great series. He can run into
all the Astros had a great series.
They got fed, except for the Carlos Rodon outing to talk to Sean's guy. He was dominant down there in Houston, even though the White Sox lost that game. That lineup is really piss poor, and the fact that they're only paying people $37 million for a payroll,
right?
Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? This is a franchise. When they open up the Jake, sold out, what, how many games? 300 plus? And now they can't get anybody there? Like, there's money that they're making. They're collecting money from somebody. And to spend only $37 million where teams are spending upwards of $200 million, that's embarrassing. This is why the lockout lasted so long, because of teams like Cleveland.
Yeah. And you know who agrees with you, Herb?
Who was that?
Dallas Keuchel.
My guy.
One more little bit
that
from Dallas. Little bit from Dallas, Steven, if you want to put it up here from spring training. You took a little nice shot at the division rivals.
The Cleveland team. I mean,
there it is. Dallas Keuchel, quote, "Cleveland is Cleveland. They always figure out a way to win and hang in there. From a CBA standpoint, I'd like Cleveland to pay their players more. But I'm not an ownership group, so I can't say much."
Love it. I mean, the fact that Max Scherzer makes more than their entire team, the fact that the Pirates pay people $31 million and there's 10 players with a higher AAV than that, it is piss poor, like you said.
I think I know where all the money is going in Cleveland, because I'll tell you something. No stadium that I've ever been to in Major League Baseball has a better soundtrack than the thing that's going on at the Prague. I mean, you could just sit there. You're there like I don't know if people know this, but the writers, we get there really early. We're there like 3.5-4 hours before the game, because that's when we got to do all the availability and stuff. You could sit there for 4 hours and just rock out and just sit in the seats, just soak it all in. Cleveland does rock in that fact.
Cleveland Rock City.
Sure. Yeah, very fitting with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They probably teach lessons. Could you imagine Cleveland High School? Like, they probably have a rock class. Like, that's sick.
Man,
like,
I need to move to Cleveland.
Very, very school of rock style.
I mean, that guy's still up there beating his drum still, right?
The guy from Major League?
The fan. He was just beating his drum all day long.
And fun fact, I don't know how long ago it was, but Akron, Ohio native, Patrick Carney, the drummer from the Black Keys, went up there and drummed with the guy. Yeah. He's a Cleveland baseball fan.
It's too high.
Who cares?
What do you mean too high? With Cleveland, yes, their lineup is poor.
Really poor.
I think Herb said piss poor.
Yes. He did say piss poor. You've liked the guy aspect though of Cleveland's lineup, no? Like I thought you liked the fact that like
no, all I like of them the guy guys. Aspect of their rotation to be honest. Oh, but okay. I do think that Cleveland's a better team than the Royals just because of the pitching. You know they've got a full rotation of guys, which is good. But I'll put it this way: I've watched enough White Sox Cleveland games over the years to know that the Guardians are going to get a few wins out of this. I mean, there are some guys you can see in there is, you know, little Jordan Luplo, little Ryan Rayburn guys that are going to do some stuff. I mean, thankfully, Jordan Luplo won't get to face Manny Banuelos anymore, but still.
He's coming up. Did you see him? The Yankees? He's having a great spring with the Yankees.
Man-Ban is?
Yeah, Man-Ban is back. Wow. Man-Ban is back after going down to the Mexican League. He's with the Yankees. They've rubbed off some magic with Man-Ban.
Listen, good for Man-Ban, but that's that game he pitched against Cleveland a few years ago. That was just miserable. That date, you remember that game, Herb?
I don't.
Afternoon game. It might have been game one of a doubleheader. Uh-huh. Jordan Luplo hit like six homers.
I remember Jordan Luplo, whenever he faced a left-hander, would just crush it. Yes. Like he's like home run, home run, home run, home run, home run. Goodness gracious. And you brought up the right name to compare him to, Ryan Rayburn. Ugh.
And there seems like there's some guys in this lineup that are going to have, they're going to do some
stuff. Josh Naylor.
No, I'm not afraid of Josh Naylor. Josh Naylor is, I think that the White Sox can handle him. I worry about Miles Straw, especially how he played against the White Sox in the postseason. I'm also worried about Stephen Kwan, who we don't have listed. He'll probably make the...
There's the ambassador of the Kwan.
Yeah. He'll probably make the opening day roster. Not sure if he'll be on the actual lineup that day, but he's got a great place at this point.
It's Austin Hedges.
Yes.
They have a bunch of former Padres who are terrible on their team. Yeah. And Austin Hedges can catch his ass off. He can hit.
I'm pretty sure Josh Naylor is a former Padre.
Yeah, he's a bum. So is the guy we're going to talk about on the next slide for the pitching
rotation.
Let's pull
up the pitching rotation. One of those guys is Cale Quantrill, former Padre. But we got Shane Bieber after returning after an injury the past year. Aaron Civale, Zach Plesac, Cale Quantrill, and Tristan McKenzie. A lot of names in there, Vinny. You like the names of these guys. I'm a little bit worried, though, because Bieber coming off that injury, James Karinchak of their bullpen was really good, and then the Sicky substance strike came down, and weirdly enough, Cleveland's pitching got a little bit worse after that happened. So I do wonder what that will play into effect, but the White Sox know that every one of these guys can be dangerous whenever they're on the bump. So definitely the best part of this team is their rotation.
I think so too, but the only glaring thing they have there, and I'm not necessarily a handedness guy, all right-handers right there. All right-handers, so it gets a little the same there, and I think they're very similar pitchers too. The thing that Cleveland, I think the best thing that Cleveland does, and Vinny, you were talking about it before the show, is Emmanuel Clase. Just 102 cutter, that's unfair. They should just say, no, you cannot do that. It can be straight and 100, or it can be a cutter and 95. It can't be both. That's unfair. It's breaking bats left and right. It's Mariano Rivera, but with extra oomph to it.
With like six more miles on it. He's also not like Mariano Rivera's stature. He's huge. There's two guys in the AL Central that own the White Sox. One of them, Emmanuel Clase. The other one, Scott Barlow of the Royals. So I do fear their bullpen. Like the pitching is the biggest strength of them. If they can keep it into 1-0 games, we know that the Sox bats, like they were either red hot last year or they can go cold. I know they don't really love to play in the Jake. It really feels like the bats go cold when they're in Cleveland. So I do always worry about Cleveland, but if we're looking at the grand scheme of things, they're paying $37 million for this payroll. I think that they're going to finish dead last in this season in the AL Central. I think that they'll also trade Jose Ramirez before the season. I know there's an extension talk about him going on with Cleveland right now, but
a little sign and trade action like the NBA.
I think so. Or they're probably just getting people like, oh yeah, we're going to sign this extension with Jose Ramirez. Make your best offers now because we're taking them. We'll sign him to extension. We'll also get rid of him, which would be probably a day of rejoicement for the Chicago White Sox, knowing how he plays against the Sox.
And he gets traded to like the White Sox first round playoff opponent.
Yeah, he'll get traded to the Blue Jays. Yeah. Let's go through where you guys think they'll finish. The Guardians. Where do you guys think they'll finish in the AL Central in 2022?
I think they will win the Flint, Michigan Mega Bowl and finish in fourth place.
I don't know where I picked the Royals, but I have them and the Guardians in the same thing, fourth or fifth.
I think you picked the Royals to come fifth.
Yeah, because I hate them. I hate the Guardians a little less, so maybe fourth. Because Jose Ramirez, while they have nothing else in that lineup, somebody, some pitching staff is going to be like, ugh. Well, I'm going to get Jose Ramirez out, and they're going to make a mistake, and Jose Ramirez is going to hit a 3-run home run, and that bullpen and that starting rotation is going to carry that for a 3-1 win.
Yeah, the rotation is definitely interesting and fairly young. I mean, none of those guys are old. I think the oldest one is Savale. But I look at, like, the nature of their lineup, and, like, they don't have a ton of prospects. Like, Detroit has up-and-comers. We talked about Torkelson yesterday. The Royals have up-and-comers. I just think that Cleveland, like, they're just going to get worse and worse and worse. Like, Stephen Kwan's an interesting name, but they don't have a ton of, like, top prospects. Even, like, the Twins have guys from the Barrios trade. Like, they need to really start spending money on their team or building up this farm because it's kind of becoming a pathetic franchise out in Cleveland, in my opinion. Who's the biggest rival for the Sox? Is it Cleveland?
The biggest rival for the Sox?
Yeah, we're talking about
like it's
this.
Active, or you mean so all time?
We were trying to figure this out before bets today. Who, like, the biggest White Sox rival was? Steven was in this conversation. You know, the Twins are obviously up there, but yes, right now, who do you think the White Sox biggest rival is?
I say the Twins. The Twins are, yeah, because we go up there. It's always something that goes on. You talked about the Lucas Giolito game. Was it August 21st?
2018.
Yeah. Big game. Needed to get it done.
Day I met Jeff Samardzija.
Sox and Twins fans don't come together too often. They don't have a thing where I feel like the Tigers are a good fan base. I went up there a couple times, and I feel the Tigers fans are welcoming. I go up to the Twins. I didn't feel welcome. I felt like I was attacked because it's a natural rival. We do not like each other. Maybe it's old school Blackhawks, North Stars things there, but or Minnesota and the Bears, but – yeah, I do not like the Twins probably the most, and then the Royals are really close, but they don't really pose a threat to the White Sox taking the division this year, even though they're going to win a couple more games against the White Sox. I think the Twins are their biggest rival.
When you're at these parks, is there a team that gives a vibe of, like, hating the Sox?
Yes. Oh, him?
Oh, yeah, I was asking him. But you, I mean, well, oh, yeah, no, you, I mean, you answered the damn question.
No, not Vinny. No one hates Vinny.
I was going to say, I think Herb spot on from the who do White Sox fans think is the biggest rival. Then I think there's the who do the guys in the clubhouse think is the biggest rival. And until proven otherwise, I'm going to say Kansas City just because we have a quote from Tim Anderson for however many years ago it's been at this point. Oh, yeah. It says, I don't like the Royals. So, I mean, listen, they're the team that freaked out on them for the bat flip. They're the team that cleared the bases that day. TA doesn't like them. We know TA embodies the White Sox. So I'm going to say it's the Royals, even if they're not necessarily jockeying for top spot in the division with that team.
I think I hate Cleveland the most. Just looking back on all the games, they've had Ryan Rayburn, they've had Jordan Luplow, like Travis Hafner I hated. I hated Victor Martinez, even though he was a Tiger as well. Like, I think just fan-wise, I also hate the Jake, just the look of it. Like, I don't like watching afternoon games in Cleveland. There's something about the way the sun sets.
I haven't been there since 2011, opening day, and I didn't have a good time, but Vinny says the stadium's all right and the music's good.
I liked what they had going on there in Cleveland. I don't mind that ballpark. I think I like that ballpark better than Detroit.
They have stadium mustard there too.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
I mean, I like Detroit. I think Cleveland. I just think like I go like with the welcoming of fans, Detroit, and so I don't really dislike them. I don't know why I should hate them because of the 2000 fight we had with Robert Fick. I still don't like him, and other Tigers out there. But I feel that they're pleasant people. Cleveland doesn't register with me now, and I don't really know a lot of Cleveland Indian fans. Are there?
Well, now you know none.
Well,
I was about to say, are they Drew Carey? I don't know him personally. Yeah.
Shakia
Taylor. She isn't.
Yeah,
like she doesn't care what the Cleveland Guardians do on a daily basis.
No, but
I like the name, by the way.
The Guardians.
I do.
They liked it so much that Herb showed us this on their spring training facility that they peeled off the the first part of the their former nickname and left the IANs, and now it's a white IANs with a gray GUARD. So it's Guardians, but it looks like clearly they have just removed the first part of the old nickname. So Guardians is fine.
I love when you go local. And they've got the Guardians of Traffic statues there right outside the ballpark. So I like the name. It's my favorite new team name in sports since the Kraken was good. I like the Kraken, but the Pelicans. I'm a big New Orleans fan of the team name New Orleans Pelicans.
Not a big Commanders fan.
No, yeah, Commanders. No, don't like that at all. Yeah.
I didn't mind the Golden Knights, but also I didn't like that at all. Yeah, Seattle Kraken. I like that.
Kraken's good. Pro Kraken.
Yeah. I'm not anti-Guardian. It's just boring because they have the same uniforms, basically the same C. They have a new weird baseball logo, but that's about it. Do we want to talk real quick about the Manny Benuelos game on May 9th, 2019, where he gave up 5 earned runs, or the Manny Benuelos game against Cleveland on May 14th in 2019 when he gave up 5 earned runs?
You know,
when
5 days later.
He gave back up back-to-back starts. He gave up 5 earned runs against Cleveland.
Really consistent.
10 earned runs in 8 1/3 innings.
You know when they say, you know, you have a bad memory and it's repressed. I do not recall that. Like, I just took it out of my mind because I guarantee I watched both of those games and I do not remember, firstly, Manuel Benuelos pitching for the White Sox, and it's just out of my mind. Like, I'm just so furious with him, apparently, and I didn't know that he was getting ate up by the Cleveland Indians.
Same season, Manny Benuelos, Irvin Santana, Odrisimer Despaigne.
What do we do?
Same season.
I still got Odrisimer Despaigne in my mind. Ugh. I mean, those are the pangs of rebuilding teams.
Yeah.
You have to have these pitchers who just give you innings sometimes and are going to get their heads blown in. It's man, Benuelos. Is he a lefty?
Yeah, he was. And that's why Jordan Luplo killed him. That's why Babe Luplo was murdering him. He hit 2 home runs in that first one on May 9th. So he had 8 total bases on that one. 2 solo shots for Jordan Luplo off Manny Benuelos.
Ricky, what are you doing?
He had no one else to go to. It was that or Ross Detweiler.
Ricky's like, what are you talking about? I got Odrisimer Despaigne otherwise. Shut up, Herb.
Thank you guys for watching the CHGO White Sox podcast, and thank you for listening. He's a saint. Listening on your ride home.
I need to call up Ricky Renteria and say you're a saint for what you did. I think I had his number. Mm. He's a San Diego guy.
Greg.
Yeah, maybe he's a San Diego guy. He's a good
guy.
You
got Sean Evans on the podcast. Let's see if we can get tomorrow. former White Sox manager Ricky Renteria on the podcast.
He's too good of a guy.
Herb teased it. Sean Evans will be on the podcast tomorrow. We are live at 2 p.m. We will be joined by Sean immediately at the start of the show. So if you're listening, or if you're looking forward to that, 2 p.m. tomorrow, you could join us on the YouTube live stream. We always tweet it out at @CHGO_White Sox. So follow us there. Sean Evans, the host of Hot Ones, will be joining Vinny, Herb, and I on tomorrow's episode of the CHGO White Sox podcast presented by PointsBet. Use code CHGO when you sign up to get 2 risk-free bets up to $2,000. For Vinny Duber, for Herb Lawrence, for our producer, Steven Nicholas, I'm Sean Anderson. We will talk to you tomorrow when it will be a hot episode.